Hello and welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drew Grizzick.
Hey,
what's
Drew.
Up, James?
Hey, episode 41.
41, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, cool.
So how was your week?
Pretty good. Got a lot done at work.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's it was obviously very, very amazing because I didn't remember it.
It happens.
What about yourself? How was your week?
It was really good. Pretty busy still. We've got a big deadline coming up next Friday, I think. And after we nail our deadline, hopefully, we're planning on going to, have you ever been to Cannibal Cafe?
No.
So they have this huge burger. It's called The Beast.
The Beast.
And it's like 6 6-ounce patties. It's huge, wow. Right? If you can eat it in 30 minutes, you get a t-shirt, the burger's free, you get your picture on the Wall of Fame. Yeah. If not, I don't know how much it costs, but we're going to go, a few of us are going to attempt that, and a few of us are just going to sit and watch.
So where's that?
There's a couple locations. I think there's one on Commercial, and the one we're going to is on Granville.
Oh, nice.
Right off Hastings.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's actually right beside where we were at Active State.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I noticed in your Slack, you were talking about the Beers O'Clock, and you had pictures of you and the ping pong table and all that stuff on the Friday, I guess.
Yeah, and I liked how that one guy was like, I heard we need a ping pong table to be a real startup. That was, I don't know what he was going with that, if he was trying to be funny or just trying to be hurtful, but whatever.
But you took it neutrally.
It's been pretty cool. One of the people we work with brought it in. He moved recently, I think.
Yeah.
He brought it by. So it is a kind of small ping pong table, but it's actually really fun to have. So we usually play not that many, but like maybe 2 or 3 games a day.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice when you're working on something, you're kind of stressed, or you're focusing too much, and to just kind of stand up and move a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take your mind off things.
Yeah. We have a foosball table at Invoke as well as a ping pong table. So
because
we're doubling down on the tropes of companies with their toys.
I guess you have less than an excuse to suck at foosball than I do.
Yeah, I definitely do. Except I've only played, I think, twice. Ping pong, I'm much better at ping pong. So
right.
if Microsoft wants to have another ping pong tournament, then I'm down for that.
Nice. That might be pretty fun.
Yeah, cool.
So yeah, we're actually doing some pretty interesting things. I wish I could talk more about the company that I'm working for. And I don't even know why I can't, but I just know I'm not supposed to say much.
Sure.
But it looks like we're doing really well and getting a lot of contracts and things like that. So much so that we actually now have budget to hire on 2 more developers to help get us to the next phase of things. So we're looking for 2 more developers. Ideally, I guess people who are comfortable working with multiple levels. Or multiple layers of the stack, maybe someone comfortable doing something in C# one day and maybe Angular
nice.
The next.
Cool.
You know, we have some stuff in Rails, so that would be nice. Even C++ or Go.
Yeah, cool.
It's not necessarily like you have to have experience with this particular thing. But if you've been around the block a little bit and you're interested and looking for something fun to a little kind of startup. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know if I'd call it a real startup environment because we have pretty seasoned people and pretty professional people. Everyone does, I think, a lot of work, but the environment's really relaxed.
When I was doing a Startup London in London, Ontario, one of the things that we did was try to define what a startup was.
Yeah.
Because we'd have companies that were like 10 years old that would come and say, yeah, we're a startup.
Mm-hmm.
We'd really be like, really? Are you actually a startup? Like, it just seemed like there was almost like the marketing of the term startup
mm-hmm.
was more important than what it actually meant.
Yeah.
And the definition that we came up with was a new business or company that has an experimental or unproven business model.
So I think that kind of falls within what we're doing. We're, I guess we're funded and led by a company that's been around for a while,
mm-hmm.
but the product that we're working on and
right.
our team is a new product,
yeah.
new kind of a new industry, actually.
Yeah,
as well,
so I think that actually would qualify as like experimental or mm-hmm. new in some way, where I do find it kind of weird when there's like 10-year-old startup. Like, I don't think I'd call Hootsuite a startup anymore.
Right.
Especially since they're
cash
flow positive and they have this like, they have a very, very well-defined product,
mm-hmm.
a variety of customers. They're very solid as far as, from the outset, I could say that. Who knows what the...
Yeah. I think same thing with Unbounce. Someone was saying that.
Yeah.
I think someone at Unbounce was saying they can't call themselves startup anymore.
2 floors of a building. I don't know if you can.
Yeah.
Might be a bit,
and they've been around quite a while.
Yeah, they have. Yeah, you know. That's a good point.
At the same time, I wonder if you're still going through rapid growth. Would you still be considered a startup?
I don't know. I wonder if there's like a plateau. If that's part of the deal of like when you stop calling yourself a startup is, you know, when you reach that plateau. Because I think at the beginning it's a strong term to be associated with. Like, oh, we're a startup, because there is a lot of like positivity around that.
Yeah.
But I think as you become an older company or a larger company, that term also means like there is an air of like immaturity around it, like oh, are you a new company, are you a solid company, are you going to be around for later? Because like some people don't want to invest in companies as customers if they don't know if the company's going to be there in 2 years, right? Like what is going to happen with that? It's still a startup.
I think some investment groups even have that as like a clause. They won't invest in startups.
Right It can be, there can be some turmoil around like how you pivot away from that, to use a startup term.
So actually I wanted to mention, remember a couple of weeks ago I was like, oh no, drewbro.com's down,
right?
And with, you know, 1&1 registrar is the registrar. And that was a nightmare. Like, that was unbelievable. So I can't believe how finally, like 2 weeks. It literally took me 2 weeks to get back up. And you know what had happened. So this is, I think this is kind of crazy,
right?
So they had my contact information, but the email they were sending me was ending up in my spam, or something like that. And I tried to look for it. So I don't know if I can blame them or blame myself for that. Like, I probably have to take the blame for that, I think. So they sent me an email, and I guess my credit card that they, or whatever info automatic billing they had on file, wasn't working anymore. I'd got a new card, so it had to be updated, and that was ending up going to spam. And so they, the weird thing was like, that was like a year ago,
right?
A year. So they kept it up for a year and everything was okay. And then like at a year later,
right?
Right. So they stopped it.
Uh-huh.
But when they stopped service to my site, so all of a sudden now I looked at like drewbro.com and it wasn't working, and I called them up. And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, so first of all, saying Drew Bro to them, even spelling them out, they were looking up Drew Brew. And they're like, yeah, we don't have that. We don't know that. And then, so I had to really like spell it out and go through it when we finally got it. And I was looking at the who is. I'm like, but it says 1&1. You guys totally have this. And so finally, like, oh, yeah, we got it. You can totally get it back. But we can't do anything about it. You have to call this number. It's a collection agency. And what? I was like, what? And this is a Saturday, right? And so they were closed until Monday. So I'm calling. Right. Monday, I call them, get a hold of them. And they're like, oh, well, you can do like send us a money order or something. Or, you know, why don't you just call the company and pay them with credit card? We do that all the time. I was like, what? I can do that?
Yeah.
They're like, yeah.
So you're basically paying like telephone tag.
Yeah. So I call them back and I'm like, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh. And they asked me. So they asked me my password for my site on the phone. Or it's my login on the phone. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't really want to
get man in
that,
the middle,
right?
Man. You get
like,
man
what
in the
is
middle.
Going on? And so anyway, so I logged in and I updated my payment info. And I was like, I'm going to use PayPal because I can just have that one central place where I can update that, which was nice that they had that.
So that's cool. Yeah.
I did that. And so anyway, it was only like, it's like $15 for the registration for a year. And there was like an $18 fee for paying late or something.
Yeah, like,
which
like
I didn't really mind that much. Yeah. But it took so long, and then so I paid it, and this is like a couple days after, right? So it took me a couple of days to figure out that I could have just paid it with them in the first place.
Right.
And then it was like I don't know how many times I kept calling them and was put on hold for like hours and transferred, not hours, sorry. Like literally 10 to 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is still a long time to be put on hold. And then transferred to a different department and having to explain everything. Finally, and they're like, oh yeah, it should be up in like 24 hours. I even got email, like it'll be up within the next 2 to 4 hours or something like that. And this is a week ago.
So obviously that didn't happen.
Yeah. So then, so I kept calling them, and finally, like, it kept getting escalated. Finally, I guess I got a person who was, pretty nice and took notes, and then was like, okay, I'm going to have to escalate this to a different department, but don't worry. I put a bunch of notes on your file and they'll be able to open it and read those notes.
Awesome.
I was like, wow, that's great.
Yeah, imagine that. Imagine
that. So I got escalated, and then the person was like, oh, yeah, we should have this. So now the domain got transferred to me, and that's kind of weird. So it's like a new really registered to me domain that I already had before.
Weird.
I don't know.
Maybe that was a workaround for what happened to it? to transfer it to you?
So now I'm at like so now I've got it and I paid for another year and I have it registered and I've got PayPal associated with it. So hopefully that doesn't happen
again.
So
we'll hear the same story a year from now, right?
Well, here's the question that I have is, should I transfer off of like 1&1 or should I give them the benefit of the doubt? Was that the right way to, for them to go? It's only a $15 a year thing. So I think I've already spent more than that worth of support time.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it have been nice had they just sent me, because they had my phone number on record.
Right.
A phone call or a text message.
Yeah, I was about to say, as much as I hate GoDaddy, they are like almost aggressive when it comes to like hoping that you renew your domains, right?
Right, yeah.
So like with my old company and even a lot of our clients, our old clients there, like we were handling like lots of domains, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd always register with GoDaddy because it was you could call them and get everything done over the phone, and they were relatively quick. A few years ago, they used to have abysmal a record for customer service, so they've literally done like a 180 and tried to really change that. And one of the things they actually do is they'll call you and say like they'll check up with you every once in a while, like if you have domains expiring, if you have hosting that's expiring, they'll call you. Especially if you're a business, which is annoying at the time, but
it's actually kind of that's a funny thing. That's one of the reasons I didn't want to go with GoDaddy was because of all the spam that they send.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I don't know. Is there, I got to take a look at the, cause the Canadian anti-spam law is pretty strict, right? I got to take a look at that. Do they require, I'm not sure, but it would be really nice if they did, that there was a way to opt out of any marketing email and just get, email specific to the service that you're paying for?
I believe that's like one of the stipulations about why it exists. There's a difference between, but if you're a customer, they're allowed to send you notifications, like emails, notifications meaning any sort of stuff. One of the big things about the rule was it didn't apply to charities, which is important. The other thing was that it required permission. Now, the permission thing, I'm not 100% sure.
Double opt-in?
But it's also like permission, I think, was very vague. Like it could be a spoken word contract. Like maybe you called GoDaddy once and you said like, hey, I'm interested in becoming a customer, and you gave them your email.
Yeah.
That might actually constitute consent. I'm not sure exactly what that
is. I think that's the initial opt-in.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to send them an email and they'd have to confirm there, which is the double opt-in part.
I know if you've ever used MailChimp, one thing you do is like you sign up on like the link, you click like subscribe, and then you enter your email, you get an email, and then you click confirm inside.
Yeah, that's the double opt-in.
The other part of that is like to stop people from signing up other people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a confirmation, like, yes, this is your email, you are signing up. Otherwise, I could just type in your email and you would be subscribed to it no matter what, right?
Right.
Which would be bad.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So long story short, yoo-hoo, it's back up.
Yeah. Woo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I don't know. Check out hover.com. I've heard good things about them for domains. All right. Let's jump to
meetups around town.
Pretty busy week, actually. I think we're getting back into the normal flow of meetups because we have a fat week coming up.
Well, believe it or not, this week actually is the last week of the month, and it does jump into September. So maybe that it is the end of summer.
Yeah.
Summer. Did you get to anything last week?
Oh, yeah. I went to Code and Coffee.
Nice. How was it?
Great. Awesome. I saw Alex there, one of the people that we first interviewed from Code Core. That was one of the students.
Oh, yeah.
It was
Brew House now, isn't he?
It's his second time speaking. He was talking about – he's basically talking about learning the new JavaScript, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
He was learning – because he was in the middle of learning JavaScript, and he was trying to learn ES5, ES6, React, React Flux, React Router. And he said, like, it was crazy. And he was basically giving tips on how to learn new, like, frameworks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Basically saying, like, take them one by one. Like, it's tough to do that. And it's slow. But you're going to feel a lot more comfortable in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the general gist of his. As well as there was another presenter from Kids Code Genus. The coding company. And it was this girl. She was talking about teaching students how to code using Scratch. She demoed some of the games that the kids made. And a lot of them were really cool and, like, creative. It was pretty awesome to see some of that stuff. So that was pretty awesome as well.
That is cool. Was that over at Mobify?
Yes, it was. Mobify.
Nice. All right. I don't think I made it out to anything last week. And if I did, I don't remember. But yeah, pretty busy week.
Yeah, cool. All right.
Okay. So this week, we've got also another busy week coming up. We've got some interesting things happening. Starting out on Monday, the 29th, we've got GitHelp and Zero Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And that's over at Decentral, 436 West Pender. Make sure to bring a laptop to that and be ready to talk Git and talk about Zero Tech and what that means.
Cool. All right. August,
that's
full
four to six, by the way. Yeah, the full indie. So this is on a Monday. Usually I thought it was on a Thursday or something. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of neat. And I think this is the music edition. It's over at Butcher and Bullock, which is 911 West Pender from 5:30. No need to bring a laptop, but maybe bring your wallet and be ready to buy some beers. It should be a lot of fun. Yeah. But if you do have a game you wanted to showcase, then do bring your laptop out.
Yeah, they have live music too, which is kind of cool.
Well, I think it is the music night.
Yeah.
Oh, live music?
Yeah, live music. And the best meetup of the month.
Oh, yeah. So it's the Hacker Nest Vancouver. Cool. This is happening Monday at 8 p.m. to 10:30 over at Brain Station. This is the fourth floor, 1110 Hamilton. They have a great space there that's right in Yale Town. Should be easy for everyone to make it out to. And that should be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we have a kind of an oddball, I guess.
Yeah, we have a couple. I put them down here just because I didn't want to, and I thought you would if I didn't, so I'd beat you to it.
Sure. Cool.
But I think they're kind of oddballs. So this one, YVR Startups.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. What do you think?
Cool. Yeah, I think it's interesting. Maybe you can ask them what a startup is.
What is a startup? Yeah, that's a good point. So there's this Startup Connect and Discussion group for August. This is at 6 p.m. on Monday over at Blends Coffee in Yale Town. So if you are going to, it's funny because they even say that we'll be heading over to Hacker Nest event next door after. So I guess it kind of ties into that.
Cool.
We do ask. It says also that everyone pitches in $5 to help with the cost of running the meetup. Interesting. So anyway, over at Blends right beside the... right beside Hacker Nest, and that might be kind of fun.
Yeah, I think I might check that out. I'm really close to both of these locations, so I might just go there a little bit early and check it out.
Really close to both as well, but I think I'm probably going to be tied up actually getting things ready for Hacker Nest.
Now we have ideas meetings. So I think we plugged this one before, actually.
Yeah, this is a Pixel Crafters
joint.
announced on Pixel Crafters. A Pixel Crafters joint.
Yeah.
Yeah. So ideas meetings. It's kind of neat. This is over at 343 Railway Street. This is the studio at Creative Coworkers. So you buzz 010 and you go down the stairs / elevator at the far end of the L-shaped entrance hall. And there you get to it. So if you have an idea you'd like to get some feedback on, just kind of want to talk ideas with people, this looks like the meetup for you.
Yeah, I always like these. It's great for newcomers that just want to get in touch with people. Another Vancouver Pixel Crafters meetup, but we're going to Tuesday now.
Yeah, so Tuesday the 30th, we're starting at early in the morning, 8 a.m. So this is one you made it out to last time, didn't you, James?
Yes, it was awesome. Great time.
Open Coffee.
Yeah, it's at Nelson the Seagull on Corral Street, 315 Corral, and... I just got a regular coffee, which was very nice. Very nice. I actually noticed it is a little bit more expensive than normal at Nelson the Seagull, but I did notice. It was $3.15 for a large coffee. So like a large coffee at Starbucks would be like $2.85, I think. $2.85.
You like know exactly? Yeah, I'm not sure.
Something like that.
I don't know.
Yeah, but
I stopped drinking coffee a couple months ago. Actually.
Oh yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. You've been on. Yeah.
Not like I quit coffee, but I did.
You just
quit
coffee. I just stopped off of it. Yeah. Well, I noticed a very big difference, and I actually was very, very happy with that cup. I was satisfied.
Yeah.
So that was great. I also chatted with a bunch of new people I'd never met before, as well as talked to people from their startups, talked to a guy who just moved here from Toronto. It was really cool.
Sounds like a lot of fun and definitely worth going out for a coffee and meeting some good people.
Yeah, it's great just for the coffee.
Check it out. Open Coffee. And I guess, like you said, not necessarily, you wouldn't need to bring a laptop. You usually do because it's on your way to work.
Yeah.
You got your laptop with you.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you ever bust it out?
No, I haven't. Maybe so, I'll try to come up with an excuse to.
All right. And we have Financial Technology Meetup.
Yes.
This is kind of neat. And they've been doing this, I think, for a couple of weeks, three meetups or so. And this is an in-depth intro to securities industry. This is over at Voleo Inc., which is the 12th floor, 1140 West Pender. Mm-hmm. And this looks like it should be a lot of fun. Anthony C. is hosting, I guess. And so you can Gmail him if the door is locked.
Yeah. If you're doing anything with financial technology, you probably want to think about security. Also, our friend Charles is part of an organizer as well.
Yeah, this should be fun. And then there's, of course, the weekly staple of the Vancouver community, Vancouver Closure Meetup. And this is happening at CodeCore 142 West Pender from 6 p.m.
Then we have Tech Vancouver Tuesday at 6 at Hootsuite this time.
So this is a $12 in advance event, so make sure to get your tickets. I think it's $20 at the door if you didn't have your ticket in advance. But you've said, I haven't actually been to this one. You've told me that nothing but good things about it.
Yeah, definitely. That $12 is not just, there's beer and pizza there. You're definitely going to get your $12 worth, as well as the great speakers that they always have. Mm-hmm. So this event actually has been spreading across Canada slowly. Originally started in Toronto, but they've jumped to Vancouver now, so it's getting its kickstart here. It's a great place to meet people, chat about tech, meet different startups, meet different CEOs, like even find out about jobs or people that are hiring. It's a really good networking event.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool. I should try and make it out one of these times. And this one is over at Hootsuite, which is number 5 East 8th Avenue. And I guess I wouldn't worry about bringing a laptop to that.
No.
And then we have the, this looks like it might be a new meetup. I haven't seen it before, but it might just have been in hiatus because they have a lot of members. So they've probably been around a while. I think, yeah, founded 2013.
Yeah.
But this is the AngularJS Vancouver. And so they're having a meetup over at Microsoft, 725 Granville.
Cool.
And this is from 6:30 on Tuesday. And this is an introduction to Angular 2. So the topic's covered. What is Angular 2? How is it different from Angular 1? Is Angular 2 for me? Would I benefit from the upgrade? And how to get started? Is it time to upgrade? And this is kind of interesting. People talking about upgrade from 1 to 2 as it seems like a normal logical path. But I haven't actually done much with Angular, but I have heard they're so different that it might not necessarily be an upgrade. I wonder if that's anything anywhere near akin to Python, like 2.7 and Python 3.
I think it's more disconnected than that. Like I've heard the noise and the ramblings about 2 versus 3 for Python, but I know for 1 versus 2 in Angular world, you have like a whole different stack for 2. There's 185 people registered to go to this thing. So I think it's going to be a really, really packed event.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, there's 185 people going.
Yeah.
There's also, we don't know how many people on the wait list.
Sure.
So maybe a lot more.
Okay, we have Wednesday, 4:30, the Vancouver Linux Desktop Meetup.
This is pretty cool. It's over at Decentral, another one of the meetups hosted by Adam Dimitrik. And so this is from 4:30 to 6:30. If you like Linux, if you love Linux, if you hate Linux, then this could be the meetup for you to go and talk Linux to Linux desktops.
Yeah, get converted.
Or maybe you've been struggling to get that install on your Chromebook, for example. Then I think this would be an interesting one to go to. I've always thought about that. I don't know why it appeals to me, but to have like a Chromebook that I could just have in my back pocket and walk around with or something, and have a nice Linux running on it. There's two reasons why I don't do that. Do you know what they are?
The hardware isn't as nice as Macs.
Yeah, it's mostly the keyboards. I've had a really hard time finding a decent keyboard. I really, really dislike the the 88 key keyboard that has like the I think it's for the French French key style keyboard, but it has like a half enter key on it, and it just it really bothers me. Yeah, it's something I don't like and don't want to get used to.
Ruin your keyboard, foo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing is the keyboards, like, they just don't feel as nice.
I do like the Mac keyboard. Although I find this, I'm holding a 2011 MacBook Pro right now, and I like this keyboard more than my other 15-inch 2015 MacBook Pro. These keys are much chunkier. The other ones, they're more slim, and I don't know if you've noticed the difference.
A little bit.
Yeah.
So they... I had a 2011. Is yours 2011?
Yeah.
You said? Yeah, I had a 2011 as well. I really liked it. It was great. I ended up spilling water on it, which was the only... Otherwise, I don't think I'd have been able to justify ever upgrading.
Yeah, can't justify changing this because it's still cooking.
I do like the Retina display, though, to be honest, especially if you're looking at code.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice and crisp.
Yeah, those fonts look great.
I haven't gotten used to the new MacBook. They have a really, really low profile. Ones, do you know what I'm talking about? Those, I've just played around with them a little bit. I'm sure I could get used to them, but it feels to me, it really bothers me when my nails get to a certain length and it doesn't feel comfortable to type on a keyboard anymore. And that, it's kind of like a similar experience to that. Just, I don't like it.
Yeah, I like the travel. I used to use a mechanical keyboard. I'm actually thinking of bringing it to work, but it's a little noisy, so I don't want to like disturb the people around me. But we'll see what happens if I
don't.
Bring
they
it
wear
in.
Headphones?
And some of them do, some of them don't. So
I have an interesting, counter argument to that.
Sure,
is that I really like mechanical keyboards personally, and I have a mechanical keyboard at home. I don't have one at work at the moment. Some other people do, but something that I've noticed is mechanical keyboards. They have a nice tactile sound. They're like clickety clackety click. Right when you hit them, you hear that, and it's not obtrusive at all. Maybe it is. It's just a noise that you can kind of, it's a steady noise, clickety-clack, clackety-click. But when you hear a regular keyboard, it's kind of like somebody's whispering at you, but in a way that you can't ignore anymore.
I see. It's a different kind of annoyance.
Yes.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. I understand. I understand what you're saying, for sure.
Yeah.
My girlfriend has a super loud keyboard. She's one of these, like, gaming keyboards that's, yeah, like, really, like, click, 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 click.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I'm able to just let it go. Like, I don't, it doesn't bother me.
Like the Blue Cherry MX?
Yeah, I think they are blue. It's one of those Chromas, the chroma key ones with, like, the rainbow LEDs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's really loud.
Yeah.
Louder than my other one, but I think I have browns in mine, so that's it's not super loud. But yeah, I'll definitely try to bring it out. Anyway, Linux Desktop Meetup. Check it out.
Yeah.
Bring your keyboard.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then we've got the BrainStation Vancouver. So this seems to happen on the weekly recently.
Yeah.
And this is happening at 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Info session, find your place in tech. If you're interested in where your place in tech is, even if you're already in tech, you might want to go to this info session to find your place in tech.
Cool. What's up, Learn Data Science?
Yeah, so this is happening over at SFU, 555 West Hastings Street in number 1200. And this one is the reading group.
Yes, we are reading Visualizing Data Using TSNE.
All right, so definitely make sure to read that before you go. And it looks like the schedule is 6 p.m. Doors are open. Feel free to mingle. From 6:30, the reading group starts, and 7:45, off to a nearby restaurant for food, drinks, and a breakout discussions. So it sounds like a lot of fun. I hope to see you at that on Wednesday.
Cool. Then the last one here was the Vancouver Creative Technology Meetup.
The TED Talks. So that was kind of interesting. So they said, this is over at Maker Labs, 780 East Cordova Street from 7 p.m. And it looks like a talks night. And it says, last month's VR and Lupin meetup was a lot of fun, and it was great to see so many people come out. There were a lot of great questions for the presenters, and I think everyone learned something new. So for August, they're bringing back the TAD Talks, where anyone can share what they've been working on. So this looks like it should be a lot of fun, and yeah, might be good to go to.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Thursday.
So we have DDD, CQRS, and ES practitioners. If you're not sure what that is, look it up or listen to one of our past episodes, especially the one with Adam, who does a pretty good job talking about it, I think. And maybe we can link to that down below as well.
Yeah, sure.
But definitely worth going to. This is from 4:30 to 7 p.m. I highly recommend this. If you haven't been to this meetup, at least check it out once.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
All right, then we have the Polyglot Vancouver meetup.
Yeah, so this one from 6 to 9 over at Mozilla, which is 163 West Hastings. This is right on Hastings and Canby, right above from the, I think it's Been Around the World there. Really the same building as Skio Music. Mm-hmm. You've been there.
Yep.
This is the Hack Study Mentor Night.
Yeah.
So make sure to bring your laptop for sure. And it says it starts at 6 and ends at 9.
Cool. All right, Type Brigade.
Yeah, this is kind of neat. So this is over at CodeCore, which is on 142 West Hastings. And this is Thursday. It starts at 6:30, but the talks start at 7. So make sure to arrive no later than 7, because it does say no admittance during the talks. And I think that makes a lot of sense when people are coming and going during talks. It can be quite disruptive for the speakers, even if like you don't mean to be late. You just happen to be late, but somebody can, I don't know.
Sure. Yeah, it's literally type, as in type and fonts. So
yeah.
Definitely check it out.
So this looks like it should be a lot of fun, and no admittance during talks. Just remember that.
Cool. All right, the Vancouver SharePoint Users Group.
Yeah, this is kind of neat. I don't know if this is an oddball or not, but I thought we'd put it in there because it seems like it might be worth knowing about, at least. So the location's only shown to members, and we're hoping it's actually in Vancouver. But yeah, it does say that Windows Azure, a pass overview with Oliver Workus, MVP Soft Landing. So it looks like there's going to be an overview of Azure, and I guess that's somehow related to using SharePoint on it.
Cool.
And it looks like that is our week in meetups around town. And we're here with our special guests, Peter Wittig of Motive.io and Justin Valencourt of Dooley AI. Thank you for being here, Peter and Justin.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Awesome. So I want to get a little bit of a background on each of you. You're not together. You just happen to be on the show at the same time for a couple of reasons, and I'll get to that in a moment. It's actually a really interesting coincidence why we have you here. See if you can guess that by the end of the podcast, and then it'll be a bit of an Easter egg for everyone. All right, so Peter, why don't you start out? Tell us a little bit about yourself and about Motive.io.
Sure. I'm a developer by trade, I suppose. Mostly doing server-side stuff. Worked in simulation, worked in games, worked in healthcare, different things. And basically, we started this company, Motive.io, which is, the whole idea is to give creatives access to technology that they normally have to go through an engineer to access. And, you know, if you think of other industries prior to creators having access to that technology, it really slowed it down. Like, how hard was it to get a video on the web prior to YouTube or Vimeo?
Right.
And then all of a sudden the creatives got control. It's like, great, they're on our way. So we started as a location-based company. Mm-hmm. And so we're really focused on giving creatives the ability to iterate on narratives and gameplay using location-based technologies and adapting to the context of the specific user playing that experience or game.
Awesome. So looking at the site, motive.io, it says create location-based AR games and experiences. Contact us. So it looks like there's still half a contact. I can't just log in and start using it. Is that right?
We're in beta at the moment. And, you know, we made this platform roughly a little over 2 years ago.
Okay.
And we made it for games people. And games people could have cared less at that particular time. And, you know, as a little bit ahead of the curve, maybe. One of my partners says, if you went to GDC in previous years and said location-based, it was a great way to end a conversation. but now, with Pokemon, it's been insane.
Right.
So, oh, yeah. But in the 2 years prior, it's been creators in other industries who have really wanted access to our authoring tool, mm-hmm. but not
what
so
kind
much.
Of industries?
So we've worked with artists, we've worked with people in education, we've worked with people in training, people who want to do kind of historical, kind of informative, interactive displays, I suppose, experiences, things of that nature.
So what kind of person, if I'm looking at this, I'm like, I don't know, should I click this contact us? What sort of background might I have? What sort of company, what sort of use cases might I have to actually reach out?
Sure. Well, yes, you should click on the contact us button for sure. But basically, if you're in the creative field and you want to use technologies like GPS, you want to use beacons, you want to use location services, weather, time of day, social cues, many other things, and you can use a nice drag-and-drop online authoring tool to do that, then that also comes with a Unity template, which we can put on your phone right away, and then you can start iterating on that experience without needing to talk to the engineer. Meanwhile, the engineers and the designers can style out that template, make it look and feel and behave the way you want, and then periodically update the creative's template on their phone. So it lets both groups work in parallel as opposed to that very broken process of one constantly waiting on the other.
So is this kind of a platform to develop on top of?
Indeed. So whether you're creative and don't have the development, you can certainly hire us to do that. Or if you're a company who has both and you've got a project, please get in touch.
Nice. Okay, so that definitely sounds worth playing around with, at least. I don't know if maybe if I click this contact and send some contact, if I'll get a chance to experiment with it, but it does seem really cool. All right, thanks, Peter. Let's jump into Dooley.ai. Justin, maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into that, and what Dooley is.
Yeah, sure. So so I guess without going to my full life story, because it's pretty long. Basically, I started programming in secondary school and got my first job in high school working for startups. So that was awesome. Rolled out of that, worked for a bunch of startups out east in New Brunswick, mm-hmm. and then decided to come out here. Worked for a company in town called Mobify. Mm-hmm. And then basically what happened is in December, I was about to leave and I was going to go travel to India. And then once I resigned, someone got in touch with me, basically one of the sales leaders at Vision Critical, mm-hmm. who was previously a sales leader at Vision Critical.
Right.
And he had this idea for Dooley. So we sat down and he just seemed like the right guy to work on this with, so decided to pursue that since January. So basically what Dooley is, what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring your systems closer to the user. So essentially...
Yeah, looking at the site, Dooley.ai, yeah. Notes that talk to Slack.
Yeah.
Notes that talk to Jira. So it looks like it's note-based, it's your data valet. What does that mean?
Yeah, so basically what we're trying to do, so we're focusing on salespeople first. And all great salespeople take notes. Mm-hmm. The problem is those notes are siloed off. So they don't talk to anything. They're not really useful to the salesperson because they don't bring anything out of their system. So what we're trying to do with Dooley is we're trying to build a note-taking interface where when you're talking to a prospect, you're taking a note, and then it queries your CRM. It queries LinkedIn. It shows you information about who you're talking to. It shows you information about here's other deals where we were up against the same competitor, and here's how we beat those deals. Here's how we won.
So notes plus online stalking for salespeople.
I guess that's one way to put it.
We used to, at my old company, we used to take our notes in our CRM, and then they would be locked in there. Mm-hmm. And then, like, only the person that had the password could get in, or if you had an account, you could get on it, or the notes wouldn't be the greatest notes ever, or I'd take the notes after my phone call, which is like, and then I'm trying to remember, what did I say? What did they want again?
Yeah, and then that was really frustrating. Part of the reason for that is because it doesn't give the salesperson any value to write their notes in the CRM. What do they get out of it? They don't really get anything. It gives their manager in the organization visibility, but for the actual salesperson, it's not useful. So we're trying to make it useful. And then the second thing we're doing is we're taking those notes and we're syncing them back into your CRM.
Mm-hmm. Cool. There have been a number of things that I've seen, whether it be online, quote unquote, education or this or that, where we've kind of started to transition to internet or internet-based or computer-based systems, but we've just one-to-one mimicked what we had in the real world without adding any sort of benefit. And now we're starting to see a lot more, let's run some analytics over that. Let's get some sort of machine learning, or let's actually do something useful with this data. And it sounds to me like this note-taking is a place that, interestingly enough, we don't have a lot of innovation with. We have Evernote. Sure, we have more ways to take notes and, post-it notes on your computer or as opposed to on your fridge. So it might save your wrist some writing time. But how are we actually analyzing this? So that's what you're doing with Thule?
Yeah, and I mean, that's exactly where we're going. So today we have tags. Mm-hmm. So they're basically hashtags. You can, tag a competitor, whatnot. Eventually, that might be just competitor Evernote, and then after that it might be the competitor is Evernote.
Right.
So yeah, we're definitely trending in that AI direction, and I guess that's why we have that TLD as well.
yeah well, that makes sense. I think there's a lot of interesting places you could go, and probably a lot you'll learn along the way as your customer base grows.
Yeah,
and whatever.
For sure.
So you mentioned I think different rounds of funding. How are things going with the company? How many people are working there? Are you guys hiring?
Yeah, so right now we're about 2.5 people. So we have a contractor.
2.5.
We have a contractor who's working part time for us.
Right.
And then aside from that, it's basically me and my co-founder Chris. Mm-hmm. We're actively raising $1 million US. Mm-hmm. And then we also have some IROP money locked down. So we're in a position now where we can hire a first engineering hire, and we're also looking for a design hire.
Nice.
So because we don't want this to be an enterprisey look and feely tool. We want this to be like Slack for the enterprise. I know that's such a cliche now, but that's where we're trending with this.
So that's a really good position, I think, to be in. For somebody who's on the development side or on the design side, why would they consider working with you at Thule? What would be something that would say, hey, this kind of stands out to me?
I'm so glad you asked that question. So how many people here have worked on CRUD apps? There's three hands up. Someone here is really lucky. Peter's been lucky in his career. So the way I look at it, it's like, look, we're doing really interesting stuff. We have some machine learning. We're parsing notes. We have a lot of real-time stuff going on. We really care about design and user experience, because I think that's one of the ways we're going to win with what we're trying to do. For example, I come from, I've worked for a few companies now that were kind of agency model, that sort of stuff, where the product wasn't the core focus of the company. Mm-hmm. For us at Thule, the product is the entire company.
Right.
So we're all pushing on this one product. So we just want to make it really awesome and keep improving it every single day.
So does the name come from Thule Noted?
So Thule is a pun on Thule Noted. Nice. Yeah. Good observation.
Slightly different spelling. So that seems really interesting. So what sort of, I think something coming into a smaller company, especially at this sort of stage, people are excited about it. There's some starting to get some traction, getting some funding, and you can really have a chance, I think, maybe as a designer or as a developer, in a 2.5, so maybe becoming a 4.5 person team, to really have your signature on things and to really be a part of that. So that seems really, really good. And I guess you and your co-founder, you met each other and it just clicked?
Actually, that's a really interesting story as well. So they always say, you should start a company with someone you just met, because doing a company is like being married, right? Yeah. So Yeah, it's been a really good ride for us. Like, I think we've been really lucky. Looking mm-hmm. back, was it insane? Yeah, it was totally insane. It was crazy. Because like now that we're 8 months in, I see the types of discussions we have, mm-hmm. right? And it's like now that we know each other really well, we know our strengths and weaknesses. But we're really lucky that Chris really focuses on the business side and I focus on tech. And then where we overlap is really on vision, just the bit sort of product roadmap, that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But like we really play to our strengths. So would I do it again? I think I would definitely like work on a 2 to 4 week project with said person before mm-hmm. next time.
Okay, sweet. So let's hop back over to Peter and Motive.io. So looking again at the site, it does look like, you know, it is a creative, for creatives by creatives, it looks like. And definitely has really nice UI elements and things like that. What is the what's the process like, I guess, with designing, with coming up? You're in the development phase. How many people are on the team?
So I have two other partners mm-hmm. who started the company. So two of us are engineers, mm-hmm. and one comes from a TV and movies background. Okay. And the crux of everything we do is to give tools to the TV and film creative director
right.
that he can use to access these technologies without needing to talk to us. He or she, in the case of our company. But the interesting thing there is the process prior to us using our tool was he would produce documents and spreadsheets and hand them to us. We would then say, we'll talk to you in a week or two and then make the change. And we'd be like, it's right. And he'd be like, it's not. And he meant dramatically and we meant technically. And they're very different things, you know, getting the pause before the next thing happens or making this event happen first and then the other event. And that's a lot of narrative, you know, creativity and drama creativity. Mm-hmm. And he's good at that. And so we want to make sure that he's able to iterate without waiting on us. And that's really what we wanted to be able to do.
So this is really a case of, I guess, dog fooding your own product.
Oh, very much so. We use it all the time. I use it on a daily basis to make things for our customers. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's a pleasure.
Cool. I think one of the things that we first talked about when we first met was the Times Square event that you had. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a bit about that one?
Sure. We have one of our early alpha users named Fred Adam. He's a French guy and he's based in Spain. And he's got a great website called gpsmuseum.eu. It's an excellent resource for anything location-based, GPS-based, really cool. But he put us in touch with this group called Soundwalk Collective and this Spanish sound artist called Francisco Lopez. Now, he got funded by this British explorer to fly down to the Peruvian Amazon for 2 months, worked with the local people, they recorded the sounds, and then they used our tool to geolocate those sounds over 8 square blocks in Times Square.
Sweet.
And that was, thanks. Yeah,
yeah, that sounds cool.
It was great.
Wasn't there a meetup or something on that we talked about?
I saw you at Hacker Nest and I got up there and you let me do an announcement and I said, hey, can anyone help me get the word out?
Yeah, that was a few months ago, right? That
exactly.
sounded really awesome.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, I've been, yeah, trying to get the podcast. And so we finally got there, yeah.
Nice. So it's not just AR and VR, but there's, I guess, I don't know, is having headphones on considered AR?
Well, I would. I mean, you know, AR is a word or a term that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. When you're doing this type of experience in the real world, you need to occupy at least one sense at a time.
Great.
So you're either going to be using vision or sound at a minimum. I guess you could say go to the sea and smell the salty air, but that's not really the tech, it's the narrative, right?
Right.
So I think if someone is moving, I prefer audio. I think if someone is stationary, you can do something with the screen. Now, that being said, you know, think about sending someone to the Colosseum and then saying, read this amazing stuff on the screen. And it's like, but the Colosseum is in front of you. Mm-hmm. Maybe audio is better there. So depending on your experience, however you want to use it.
Cool. And also you had an event locally at the Comic Arts Festival as well, right?
Yeah, that was really fun. So we partnered with Lucas Johnson from Silver String Media, and he has created a company called Conquest Experience. And the Comic Arts Festival, basically you get a booth, and the booth costs a certain amount, and not all the real estate is equal in terms of flow. And so like, how can we drive people to different points in the space? It was at the Roundhouse downtown. And so what we did was we put beacons at certain places, and then Lucas came up with this narrative of a patron who is like would buy art and whatnot, and, mm-hmm. and you would get these tasks to say, you know, who has like a comic that looks in the style of the Japanese woodblock art, for example, and you go over there and take a photo. Now then we could record that and say someone has taken a photo at that GPS point, and that's the photo, and we could send them a push notification at the time, or we had a live actor and we could send that actor over and he was the patron and would buy the art and then he'd raffle it off after. But it was a way to get people to move from one point in the other to the in the roundhouse using beacons and narrative.
Cool. That sounds really awesome.
Yeah, so this is definitely another way where we're looking at interactions with computers, but enhancing, potentially enhancing the experience. And that seems really cool. You said you've had this product or been working on it for a couple of years?
Yeah, so we started as a location-based gaming company, and they had made, before I had joined, that was Rocket Chicken Interactive, and they had made a game called CodeRunner, which is CodeRunnerGame.com. We were making a sequel for that and still in the process of making a sequel for that. We, in the process, were making these tools. Myself and my other partner, who's an engineer, kind of come from more platform development. And so the idea of making something that was that we could reuse and to improve our own workflow kind of came out of that. And then we started using that as a way to get customers and say, hey, maybe you want to use technology in this way, or maybe you don't want to spend 18 months and $1 million to make something. Maybe you'd rather get it done in 3 months than for five figures, right, and do things that way.
Interesting. So what about, it sounds like you're just a couple of engineers, but you have quite an interesting platform happening. Are you hiring anyone? Or?
Well, we recently hired two engineers, and we did that through the Capstone project with the University of British Columbia in Kelowna, which is excellent, and I would highly recommend people take on a project with students.
How does that work?
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you get in touch with a professor at one of the schools, say you're interested in running a Capstone project, and then you have to define that project. They allocate people who are in their final year. And then you usually just sync up with them once a week. And we did it via Skype because, you know, we can't get out to Kelowna. And we wound up hiring two of those guys. And it was just fantastic. Like, they're doing great. And I would definitely do that program again. Then we have a designer starting in September. And we can't wait till she's on and has joined us.
Nice. Sweet. Yeah, that sounds really cool. So whereabouts are you located?
We're in Burnaby, just on the other side of Boundary Road. Yeah, do you know the Steamworks Brewery out there?
No, I don't.
Come on out.
Yeah, definitely.
Go out. It sounds like an offer.
It does sound
nice,
like
tasty
an offer.
Beverage.
Where is that in on the north side?
It's just off of Douglas Road. Well, we're on Douglas Road, and then the brewery's just off of Douglas Road, like right off of Boundary.
Okay, well, yeah, I'll have to go and check that out. Awesome. Okay, so that sounds really cool. So have any of you guessed why we decided to have you both on at the same time?
We're both two nice guys.
That's part of it.
Maybe it's the beards.
Could be the beard.
Yeah. I almost shaved this morning, so I hope that's not the reason.
It's not double booked.
Double booked. So,
I actually
had my personal site, drewrow.com. I had an issue with the domain registry, and it went down. And so some of our emails, I guess, got lost as a result of that.
God,
and I hadn't. For some reason, I hadn't put it in the calendar that we're having Peter on, and your thing came up, so we double booked. But it actually turned out really well, because I think there's a lot of overlap here with kind of what we touched upon about how, I think looking in the past, when computers first started getting really relevant to daily life, we saw a lot of the regular things that we were doing kind of transition. I think a lot of word processing, for example, was one of the main things. And we see a lot of things, I think, especially with education, where we see, you know, we're still having the same sort of model of a teacher teaching, you know, and kind of lecturing the students. Whereas sometimes we see things where we're kind of flipping that around and we're having enhanced computer, enhanced learning or things like that. And I think both Motive.io and Dooley.ai really bring that enhancement out. What do you think? Could you tell me a little bit about whether you think that's true and why you think so?
Yeah, I think I definitely think so. And I, you know, when you get an experience where someone has the ability to interact with a new technology in a new way, you know, I think one of the funnest parts of that is when someone has done it and then they pause for that second or that minute and then start to think of the implications of it and what else you could do. And then, you know, maybe they're connecting that with something they previously used and based on their experience, that might be something that you haven't thought of. And so that, I think that generates a lot of ideas, so I would certainly agree.
Yeah, and I mean, I also agree. I think, with what we're doing today, it's typing. Tomorrow, it's going to be voice. After that, maybe there's a camera and a mic in your meeting room, right? So who knows? So, and then, yeah, like, even if you look at VR and that sort of stuff, like, I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I think the other thing would be, you know, with something like a note-taking app, to have sort of predictive note-taking. So once you've done, once you've gone through a certain number of things, I can imagine, you know, a salesperson, maybe a car salesperson, meeting the different types of personality that you might come across and the types of conversations you might have, and maybe being able to record some of that in your note-taking, and then start to say, oh, well, you know, when you led with this type of person, when you started with this, these types of finishings on the conversations ended up with this percentage of success and whatever. And that could come up in daily meetings, in sales meetings, and you could actually show, you know, using this with our salespeople, using this app on a daily basis, we've seen, you know, 20% increase in sales in the first month, 80% over the first 6 months or whatever. And I think that seems really interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, that's exactly where we're trying to go with Dooley as well. Mm-hmm. Basically trying to find what people tag and when, and then use that to sort of predict how long, what you should say and how long it's going to take for the deals to close. So
I think you could be talking to a client, typing away, taking a note and saying, and then they mention AR games, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a link to like Motive.io, and you're like, oh, I didn't know that was here. And they're like, oh, have you heard of Motive.io? So I think there's a way to, like Drew said, it's sort of like enhancing this experience from just like word processing, which is just type, to it, the computer actually helping you and like helping you do your job. I see, like, we were joking the other day at work about, like, Slack bots, and if we had a Slack bot for, like, office questions, like, would you have to ask anyone in the office for anything? It's like, would that like, hurt someone's job if you had, like, a, like, could that happen? Maybe. Uh-huh. Or, like, even, like, having, food ordering stuff or stuff like that, would that hurt anyone or hurt someone else if they didn't support that, or the restaurant wasn't on the system, so you never go there anymore? I think that's something that's really, that could actually happen, is that people that don't jump on board with these new ways for people to organize, they could definitely get lost. I mean, you might be able to go to a museum and there's no VR in the future and like, well, this is boring. What year is it? 2010? Or you go to like, you know, you go to start taking notes and you're like, oh, this isn't predicting what I want. Like, it's, I can see these like, these,
well, I already noticed that problems. A lot whenever I read like an old school book. You know, yeah. And I'm like, I can't do a text search.
How can I grab this?
Find that word. Yeah. So that could be really frustrating. Yeah. But that's awesome. So I think in closing, are we going to see either of you on Monday, which is today, I guess, at Akronest?
But tonight.
Yeah, actually, I'm totally there tonight. So I'll see you guys there. Yeah,
it's my plan to be there. We're working on something for a client, so as long as everything goes to plan, I'll be there.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, hopefully everything does go to plan, and we're really looking forward to seeing you. Thank you very much for being on, Peter and Justin.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the VanTech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Same Room for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us, show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups
around town.